Welcome, everyone, to the Crit Rate Podcast for Wednesday, May 9th. Thursday, May 9th.
Yeah.
We had to push back the... I'm your host, Justin Skirbo, and today I'm joined by the one and only Liz Caetano.
It's just me.
It's just Liz. When's the last time you and I just did a podcast?
Never. I don't think ever.
No, the ghost night.
Yeah, but I think the ghost night, I think Alex came later.
No, really?
I think he did.
Hmm. Well, look at
this. I don't remember.
I feel like I've done a solo podcast, definitely with Chow, definitely with Alex.
Yeah.
I could have sworn that I've done one with just you.
The only time it might have been the ghost night, but I think Alex came.
Hmm. All right.
Night we were at Justin's house, and Justin Chow's house, and Justin Skirbo called me and told me to come over because there was a ghost.
I was scared. I was scared. I'm not afraid to admit it. It was a scary house, man. Chow would say as much, too. I mean, the house was haunted.
It was not... It wasn't unhaunted.
It was at the very least... There was a squirrel on the wall, for sure. Well, yeah. If this is our first podcast, I'm thrilled. I mean, we're breaking new ground here. This is good stuff.
Moment.
Oh my god. It's a shame that we have such depressing news to talk about today. But there is quite a lot to discuss. There's like some good, but mostly bad. Some Helldivers news, some new Nintendo news, and then a big kerfuffle with the Xbox scene. But before we get into all that, Liz, what have you been playing lately?
I'm still playing Baldur's Gate.
Yeah?
That's it.
Is it like comfort food now?
Yeah, I've also like...
you guys have to be like done by this point.
We're pretty close, I think.
Yeah.
I talked to Alex, because Alex has played it before. I talked to him, and he was like, yeah, we're pretty close. We're right there. We're like... There's like three... like main bad guys you have to kill. And then there's like a little bit sort of, and then you have to wrap up the story after that, and we've killed two of them.
Okay.
And also like I play by myself a lot, and I just kind of like mess around in the city, so like I'll go like exploring and kind of tie up loose ends and you know, sell stuff at the shop.
Yeah.
And then Chow will come in, and I'll be like, all right, Chow, we're fighting a bad guy. Let's go.
Yeah.
He comes in like right at the climax, and he does the big fight, and then he leaves, and then I
mop
all
up
the bodies
rest.
And I sell all the stuff.
Oh, man. It's got to be an interesting way to go about things, because, like, is he still getting, like, narrative and all that?
Yeah, because I try not to do any of the big narrative pieces without him.
Gotcha.
Though I did do a big chunk without him a long time ago, and so he's a little confused about the story.
Okay.
Because he was playing his own game without me.
Well, I was gonna say, like, I feel like this is something that organizing enough play sessions to get through something like this at length, it would be really challenging.
Especially
down Chow is always a challenge, you know.
Exactly. So especially in the beginning, like, there's a lot of like maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to do that when you're like playing together.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of like, okay, I need to like take my character. I need to like put all my spell slots in the right place. Like, what items do I have? Let me look through my equipment. And like, so you can spend like an hour just doing that. And then if that's your whole play session, like, that seems like such a waste.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's a good point.
So
you try to like just mop up all of like the necessary maintenance before.
So I try to do all the maintenance and like, you know, some side stuff. But we played a good chunk of it like all together and exploring. I think we got like the gist of it. But now, like, I saw the other day, I think it was like 150 hours.
Wow, that's a long time.
But
it's more
good.
Than I mean, Final Fantasy, good. You know?
Yeah. And I mean, not to keep dunking on Final Fantasy, because it was good, but it's definitely like, it's so full.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, as I'm playing it and like running into, like, you know, even like random characters on the street or doing side quests, I'm like, these all feel like so much more like meaningful.
Yeah.
And you know, rather than ticking off those circles.
Yeah, yeah. Different kind of game for sure.
So yeah. I mean, it's totally different, but
yeah,
it's given, you know, it doesn't feel as long.
Yeah,
it doesn't feel like I've been like, I feel like yourself, I can keep playing.
I was gonna say, do you find yourself like bored or like wanting to move to a different game, or like, because, like, I think the problem with the lackluster side content in Final Fantasy is what, like, that's what made it feel like, oh my god, are we done yet?
Yeah.
You know? Like, are you approaching an, oh my god, are we done yet?
Yeah, no.
Hmm.
Sorry. That was confusing. No, I am not.
Okay. Okay.
So, I mean, yeah, I think that's the difference.
Is there anything?
I still find myself, like, I'm, like, waiting for Chow to get back from California so we can play again.
Gotcha.
Because, like, there's a lot of major story stuff that I don't want him to miss.
Yeah.
So every day I have to, like, convince myself to find other things to do rather than to play that game.
Is there anything that you are, like, wanting to play that's, like, kind of looming in the background? Because I think that's kind of, like, at least with, I know for myself, and I think with Alex and Justin too, it was like Final Fantasy took up such a chunk that now there's like this massive backlog of stuff to play.
Yeah.
But I don't know if there was something that you were sort of like looking at, like thinking about.
A lot of things that came out recently, I wasn't super, like, I'm not super into tactics, so I wasn't into Unicorn Overlord.
I thought like Rise of the Ronin, you were kind
of. And Rise of the Ronin, actually, yeah. That's probably number one on my backlog. I was like, there's something though. That's actually, I forgot what it was. That's definitely what it is.
That game apparently did very well. Like, not critically. It was like low 80s, but I think it, like,
I mean, low 80s is still pretty good.
It like commercially did well. I think it sold really well.
Low 80s is good. Low 80s is good enough for me to play a Ubisoft game.
Yeah. It sounded like it 70s has all
is
the
usually pretty good, to play, good enough for me to play a Ubisoft game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm all about that. I'll play it. I'm sure I will enjoy it.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, no, I'll try that. I'm going to try that before next week.
Okay. Yeah, I'm like...
So I need something to do while Chow's away.
Yeah.
Something to fill my
He'll be gone until next Monday. Yeah. So I imagine...
Yeah, so I'll do something this weekend.
By next Wednesday. Probably, because you guys usually play on like Tuesday nights or something, right?
We usually play on either Mondays or Tuesdays. Yeah.
Mm. Tuesday might be your day?
Yeah.
Yeah. Post Final Fantasy, man, I've probably played like...
How's your backlog looking?
Oof, rough. But I'm diving into a whole bunch of different stuff, so I've actually got quite a few things to talk about. Probably the biggest and most relevant game is Stellar Blade.
Yeah, so what do you think?
Hour or so into it. It is... okay, so...
Because I've heard mixed.
Yeah, a couple of things. So first off, in the most endearing way possible, especially after Final Fantasy, it's very, it has a lot of like PS2-ness about it.
Yeah.
Where it's like, this is a linear game. Like the structure and like what you're supposed to be doing in a session feels very linear in the way that like PS2 action games felt, which I'm like totally down with. I'm like, this is good. Like just put me on the path. Like let me do fun stuff all the time. So I'm cool with that. A little surprised with how Dark Souls it is. Like, it is definitely, like, unequivocally a Souls game, for sure.
Okay.
Like, there are certain, like, you know, unique things about it. Like, its combat is definitely a lot more fluid. There's almost, like, a QTE-ness to the combat, where it's, like, instead of just parrying, there's, like, specific kind of, like, advanced dodges you can do. There's, like, a blink where you can, like, teleport behind enemies. Like, all this kind of stuff. And it's very flashy and cool-looking. So it's really fun, but at a baseline, it's, like, the Dark Souls feeling of, like, any enemy can kill you. You know, like, you have to take every combat encounter, like, at least somewhat seriously. But, you know, you're leveling up your sword, you're, like, getting new abilities and stuff, so it is progressing and becoming easier. And I'd say, like, its baseline difficulty is probably two or three stages below what, like, a Dark Souls expects of you. So it's a little bit more accessible in that way. But I think that the main thing that it has going for it, and, you know, boob and butt stuff aside, is it is just visually really, really cool. Like, there's a lot of, like, really insane particle effects. Something about the facial capture in this game is very weird, where it's, like, it's really good, but it's almost like it edges into Uncanny Valley territory,
where
it looks like a recording of somebody's face. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, mapped onto a 3D character. So it's a little weird in that way. Story doesn't really make a lick of sense yet. but it's... I don't know. Like, as an action game...
Excuse me.
Feels cool to swing the sword. Feels cool to parry. You know, like I said, all these crazy particle effects. Like, when you do more advanced combos... Like, in Dark Souls, there's really, like... You know, your kind of, like, basic combos. And then you can do interesting things with, like, jumping and stuff. And, like, holding down buttons. In this, it's more, like... Devil May Cry, where it's like you have a light attack and a heavy attack, and you know there's like different combos for, like, you know, you hit light heavy, and then like light heavy and stuff like that. So what you kind of get into a rhythm, you find the combos that work best for you. But in general, I mean, it's quite fun. I it's not pushing up against me too hard where it's like, you know, I'm finding it frustrating or anything. But it's kind of like a known quantity. Like, I know exactly what to expect from the game when I'm playing it. So that's been, like, part of my attention, but it hasn't fully grabbed me in the way that I want it to. Mm-hmm. So on the side of that, I also picked up that game Balatro, that poker game.
Yeah.
That game is awesome.
Yeah, you were a little worried about it being too good.
It is
fuck anyone.
Yeah, and the thing is I've been able to sort of temper myself with it, where it's like I wanted to play it enough to understand how the game works and really like get it, and I do get it at this point. And once you realize the rhythm of how the whole thing works, and I'll explain the systems in a second, but it's like once you get it, you realize how deep it can be, and then you're like now I'm at the point where I'm like, okay, whoa, like not like whoa, like I'm intimidated, whoa, like I could see why you could play this game forever,
because
like every instance of this game is going to be just a little bit different and a little bit more interesting. So the base function of it is you're playing poker, right? You're attempting to assemble poker hands, straight, flush, two pair, three pair, or the two pair, three of a kind, stuff like that, right? Poker. So you have an entire deck of cards, and you get dealt out, I think it's 8 cards. And from those 8 cards, you select the cards that make the best version of the best hand that you can make. And the idea is you're trying to basically beat 3 blinds. Blinds are like rounds of betting. The first one is the small blind, the second one is big blind, and then the third one is, it's like a boss fight, right? And usually there's like some stipulation on the game in the third one. It's like you're not fighting like an enemy or something. You're just trying to pass a certain, like you're trying to win a certain number of chips, right? That's the main like function of, like that's like the point system, right? Mm-hmm. But the thing that makes it interesting is, so like when you start a hand, I'll use arbitrary numbers because it changes all the time, but like you can only play 4 hands. Like you have to present 4 hands, and that has to like give you back a certain number of chips, right? And you can only use 4 discards. So you can select cards in your hand, throw them away, and replace them with new cards, right? Okay. So you want to do this in an attempt to build the strongest hand possible, because like the scoring system is a little complex, but it's like you're basically just trying to build good hands, and your hands only get better with jokers. So jokers are like the big change up. So in the small blind, you just have the hand that you're dealt. Then based on how well you perform, you get money, like dollars, right? Let's say like $10, and it brings you to a shop. When you go to the shop, you can buy jokers, and jokers are modifiers for the entire game. So it might say like all diamond cards are worth double points, or if like every time you use 2 pair, it will triple your multiplier or something like that, right? So you want to, and you can have up to 5 active jokers at once. So you want to kind of like choose jokers carefully to assemble like your style of play for that round.
Yeah.
So it's like you might have one that's like all spades are double points, straights give you extra points, all face cards give you double points, and something else, right? So then you're like, okay, I need to get straight, like high straights in spades. Yeah, right? But so then this is when it gets crazy, right? So you can discard cards. You can kind of like gear yourself up to play hands like that give you a lot of points. Mm-hmm. But then there's another layer, which are card modifiers, which are, they call them arcanas or planet cards. And arcanas take individual cards out of your 52-card deck and change them in some way. So you might get an arcana that says, select 3 cards and turn them into diamonds. So it's like, now you'll just have more diamonds or more whatever. And you do this after every round. So the further you get into the game, the more tailored the more tailored your deck becomes, the more like specialized the type of way that you play is. So it's just this really fascinating loop that, you know,
that sounds a lot more interesting, because honestly, I mean, I know how to play poker, and it's not that fun.
Well, so this is my thing.
I can see how this would be more fun.
Yeah, my understanding of poker is like, I understand the poker hands and I know how to play them, but betting and all of that is not very interesting to me. It's just like not the thing. But this takes the core, like just that baseline understanding. Like if you understand how poker hands are assembled, you can play this game, and there's so much nuance and interestingness to it that it really just, I mean, there are like 150 different Jokers. They all do the craziest stuff. So it's really, really interesting to see how the game develops. And like every run, because it's like roguelike style, is it's super unique and really interesting. And I'm just like really infatuated with this game. It's a cool thing. It's a cool thing. So that's the second game that I'm playing. And because I always play three games at the same time, for some reason, I just had this like itch in the back of my mind where I was like, I just want to play a fighting game. I don't know what made me want to play a fighting game, but I was like, it just feels so different than everything else that I'm playing. So I'm like, let me just play a fighting game. So I had Tekken 7 just like sitting in the background. And I remember looking up the platinum guide for that just to see like what it would take to do it. And it just seemed like fun. It's like go through the storyline. There's a couple like online stuff. Like you have to like win at tournament matches and all this sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this might just be fun to do, like just to kind of mess around with. And I've been sort of like neck deep in that for the last like 3 days. And it's just fun. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm not like super invested in it. Like, I'm not really trying to like get good at this game, but I'm enjoying it enough where it's like, I've never really played a Tekken game. I'm understanding the systems a little bit, and it's kind of just fun getting the trophies and stuff. So it's sort of a weird relaxation thing that, you know, I'm kind of going through.
So when you have three games,
yeah,
how do you like, at what point in your day or week do you play them?
So it all depends on how much time I have in certain segments. So like, you know, in the morning I might have half an hour to mess around with. So like I'll probably play Tekken because I can get like four good rounds in, and like that'll be like my half hour, right? Okay. If it's at night, like, you know, on a night where I'm not doing anything, which is usually like Mondays and Fridays, it's like those are my long stretches. So then I'll probably play Stellar Blade because I'm like, I can just sit here for like 3 hours and just like do nothing. Mm-hmm. And then Balatro has kind of been like when opportunities present themselves to play something where I don't like, there's no timing, you know, I can take as much time as I want between turns with that. So like, that's something that I've been playing on the portal where I'll like, you know, James might be watching Toy Story and I'll just sit with him and just play Balatro. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like each game functions in its own way. Last thing, last week before, after our last conversation, we finished talking about Final Fantasy VII. Immediately after that, 2 days, Allie and I beat Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons. Mm-hmm. That game is awesome.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you, did you play that on PS3 back in the day?
No.
It's really cool. So I was under the impression it was single player. We were able to play it co-op, which was really nice. 3 hour game, really, really short. But, I don't want to spoil anything about it because I think it really is worth playing, but it does something with the medium that I have never seen happen before, and it left kind of like a profound impact on me. Like there was a moment where like there's a certain like juncture in the story where you're just like, holy shit, like, you know, like it really does like affect you in an interesting way. The long and the short of it is you are playing as two brothers. Their father has some kind of disease, and you're on an adventure to
find
the cure for this disease, or find some kind of medicine that's necessary to cure this disease. But the intricate part of the game,
do you need to play it? Is it better if you play two player?
I imagine it's better if you play single player.
Okay.
And the reason, like,
because, like, Jason's not going to want to play.
No, I think you could play it single player and have a really, really good time.
Okay.
So the context here is that this is from the same guy that made It Takes Two and the game A Way Out. So this was, like, the first game, right? And the way that this game plays is your controller is essentially split in half, where your right stick controls one son and the one brother, and the left stick controls the other one. And it's a really strange thing to get used to. Like, I played with it briefly, but then when you play co-op, it was like only half of my controller works and the other half of Allie's controller works.
Yeah.
So it's kind of weird, but it's really interesting, and it goes to some pretty cool places. So I'd recommend that. Like, solidly recommend that. It's a cool game.
All right. Sold.
That is all the games that I'm playing. Animal Well came out today.
Just that.
Pretty amped about that. Are you looking forward to any of these indies that just dropped? Little Kitty, Big City?
Not really. I feel bad that I'm not more interested in that.
No,
I feel
just,
like I should be.
No, it's just whatever catches your interest, you know?
Yeah. I feel like I don't really know much about Animal Well, other than it's getting reviewed very well.
Well, that's the thing. I don't think anyone really knows anything about it.
Right?
Like, it's never really been, like, demoed. There was no reviews before it came out. Like, it's just... Boom. Yeah. It just came out with a huge splash. It's like a 91 on Metacritic right now. It's, yeah, like, pretty serious, you know?
So I'm interested to actually hear what Chow started playing it.
Yeah. I'm probably going to play it after we finish this podcast just to see what's going on.
Do you know how long it is?
I do not. I know nothing about it. And it's funny because usually I'll look up like how long to beat or something, yeah, just so I can like gauge my life. But yeah, there's no information about it because like nobody had their hands on it beforehand. But it's free with, free. It's incorporated into PlayStation included. Plus Extra. Yeah. So I don't have to pay for it. And that's awesome. So far, this has paid off with Sea of Stars and now this. So, and Dave the Diver, which I haven't played yet, but that's the thing. All right.
Let's say we get into some news.
Let's get into some news. So let's do the small ones first, and then we'll get to the last big one. So the first interesting thing, Liz, did you hear about this whole kerfuffle with Helldivers 2 in the last week?
I did.
Yeah.
I was a little confused at first as to what all... Because you know why? The first thing I saw was just a ton of memes. Like, I started, like, getting fed all these memes about, like, Sony ruining Helldivers 2, and I was like, what is going on?
Yeah.
That's so, what I found out about it.
Yeah, so the long and the short is, Helldivers 2, PlayStation exclusive, developed by Arrowhead Games, released simultaneously on PlayStation 5 and Steam. It has done phenomenally well on both consoles. I actually, like, so I heard the sales numbers for it. It's, like, the best-selling game this year. Like, yeah, like in general. Like, it might be hard for any game to beat Helldivers, which, yeah, is kind of nuts.
Except Call of Duty?
No. Even, like, the way that it's pacing right now, it might strip Call of Duty. Wow. Like, it's that crazy. So, the whole controversy was that the Steam version initially didn't require any sort of let me rephrase. PlayStation was announced that they were going to institute a patch that was going to require you to link your game to a PlayStation Network profile. This presents a couple of different issues. One, PC people just don't want anything to do with PlayStation. But two, the PlayStation Network is only available in certain countries. So there were certain people playing this game in certain countries that would essentially lose access to their game because they don't have access to PlayStation Plus. This is like China and some other places.
Yeah.
So this is obviously a challenging thing. I keep saying PlayStation Plus, I mean the PlayStation Network.
Yes.
So this obviously made like a huge splash.
Yeah.
PC players were very, very upset about this, and there was not really a boycott, but a mass negative review, right, bombing of the game. And it dropped precipitously from mostly positive from overwhelmingly positive to mostly negative, which is like a ridiculous, wow, drop, yeah, for something like that. But this has a happy ending. Sony announced that they are walking back that decision and they are no longer requiring it.
Yeah.
So good job, PC gamers.
Yeah.
You win.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel good about it, but I feel like the damage is kind of done. Like, I feel like PC gamers will be like, but you still did it. Like, you're such a jerk. And now you're just, you know, like, well, it's not like they're not getting, but I can get praise for reversing a bad decision.
Well, I think
you're just going to get a little bit less hate, hopefully.
I think the learning here is that PlayStation, I mean, they've released a number of titles onto Steam, God of War, Horizon Zero Dawn, Days Gone,
yeah,
Death Stranding, all this kind of stuff. But they haven't done something that's live service like this, and they're still trying to like feel out how to best engage PC as a platform.
Yeah.
So I think this was kind of their own sort of like ignorance to this situation.
Yeah.
So by going through this process, hopefully it teaches them in the future, like, hey, there's like certain expectations that, yeah, come.
I can't imagine they'll do this again.
Likely not.
I think they have learned their lesson.
And frankly, for how much the game, because I'm fairly certain the game sold better on PC than it did on PlayStation. So that's an audience that you've clearly connected with on some level,
yeah,
and you don't want to piss off
them, yeah.
So cool that it has a happy ending, but man, what a, it definitely took over the internet for like a couple of days there. Pretty wild. Okay, next bit of news, another small one. So Nintendo president Furukawa, I don't know his first name. Why is it escaping me?
I can double check.
It's funny because the tweet that we're referencing just says, this is Furukawa.
Yeah.
So they tweeted from the Nintendo corporate account, which is rare. And they basically said that the successor to the Nintendo Switch was going to launch before the end of the next fiscal year, which would indicate that it would be out before April of 2025. So that would also tell us that likely within the next...
Wait, what? Sorry. They said that information... Give that to me again.
So...
Because that was not the timing I understood.
So the Switch successor... Let's pull up the exact tweet.
Shuntaro Furukawa.
There you go.
Is it? Shuntaro.
All right. We're going to pull up the tweet.
But yeah. I also never know... Do you feel this? I feel like whenever I read a Japanese name, I don't know if it's being presented... Not whenever, but often. If it's being presented to me, like, first name first, surname second... Or reverse? Like, is it being presented to me the American way or the Japanese way?
I think it's being presented in the American way.
Which then, yeah.
But then when they refer to themselves, it's in the Japanese way.
Right?
Yeah, it's confusing.
And right. I feel like watching enough anime, I am used to the Japanese way.
Yeah, exactly, right?
You know? And so I'm never quite sure. And I feel like it's, I don't know, a little disrespectful to switch it all around and make it all Americanized.
So this is exactly the tweet. It says, this is Furukawa, president of Nintendo. We will make an announcement about the successor to Nintendo Switch within this fiscal year. Got it. It will have been over 9 years since we announced the existence of the Nintendo Switch back in March 2015. We will be holding a Nintendo Direct this June regarding the Switch software lineup for the later half of 2024, but please be aware that there will be no mention of the Switch successor during that presentation.
Okay. I missed that last part of the tweet.
Yeah, so there will be an announcement about it before fiscal year. So that means we will know what it is or some kind of information about it before April 2025. Because that's when fiscal year closes.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Do you think they mean he's going to announce it in 1 year?
That would be lame.
Yeah, that would be lame. To say today I'm going to announce in 1 year.
My assumption, if they follow the same track record as Switch... First one, I believe that initial announcement came out late summer, early fall, and then it launched that March.
So he said it. They announced it March 2015.
Since we announced the existence in March. Oh yeah, so you're right.
Yeah,
I thought it came out in March.
It did come out in March.
So they announced it, and then a year later it came out.
Yeah, but did it come out in 2016? I feel like I always think it came out in 2016, and it actually came out in 2017. So I never know if I have that right or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2017. So that's 2 years in advance.
2 years in advance is when it came out?
But we didn't get information about it 2 years in advance. We got, like, told, like...
Wasn't that the trailer with the girl existence in the airport?
It wasn't... They didn't announce it 2 years ahead of it. They didn't show the trailer 2 years ahead of time.
Mm.
They just, I guess it's kind of like what this is doing.
Yeah. It's a shame.
They're just announcing, hey, we're making
a thing. The 2015
was the one, was just, hey, we're making the Switch.
Yeah.
Because the announcement was, like, very close to the release, like within a year.
Interesting. Yeah. That was a magical time. That was a very different time.
Yeah.
But either way, just knowing that there is, it's funny that we think it's surprising, but it's like knowing that there's hard evidence that there's going to be a new piece of hardware is just cool, you know? It still feels like it's taken way too long. Like, I feel like the Switch is far, like, all other consoles have far eclipsed what the Switch has been doing for a while.
Yeah.
So I'm not, like, jumping out of my skin excited about it. I'm kind of like, it's about time.
Yeah, especially, like, after playing Tears of the Kingdom on it, it was, like, did not perform well playing that game. Like, my frame rates were constantly just chugging along. Every time you use that lightning move, like, the whole screen would just shut down.
Yeah. Did I tell you that So I don't think I mentioned this, but I made some significant progress in Tears of the Kingdom very recently.
Recently?
Okay. Yeah, when we went to Mystic, which was awesome, by the way. You should absolutely take your kids there. It was really, really cool.
Okay.
In Connecticut.
Yes.
We were like staying in the hotel and we were just needing to like kill time. So I was like, what am I going to play? And I opened up Tears of the Kingdom and I basically finished all the Gerudo stuff. I'm in that dungeon right now. So I did all like the preamble Gerudo stuff. And now I'm like in that one. And that's the last dungeon that I have until I guess I still haven't gotten the Master Sword yet. I don't even know how to get the Master Sword. Mm. But yeah. Yeah. I've been in the forest, but I'm like, nah, I don't feel like figuring this out, and then I just left.
I don't think this is one. The Master Sword's totally unrelated to like any of the other stuff.
Yeah, like it's not like I figured that was the case. I figured I could get the Master Sword at any point.
You could get the Master Sword right now.
Yeah. So like when I mean,
you'd have to do some stuff first, but yeah. You could get it right
now. Well, I'm sure it's like you need to have a certain number of parts to pull it out of something or whatever. Like I mean, that was the case in Breath of the Wild.
I don't even think you do.
Yeah. I just remember getting...
Because I remember seeing something that said you could get it like within 2 hours of starting the game, you could get the Master Sword.
I just remember being in the Lost Woods and being like, oh, yeah, you got to follow some like fire direction or something. Or that was the Breath of the Wild thing. And I was like, I just don't feel like...
Yeah.
I was like, I just don't feel like doing a puzzle to solve this right now. So I just bailed. Is it easy?
It is easy. It's not a puzzle.
Oh, okay.
Right. Just requires to going to some locations.
Oh, okay. Right.
That's yeah. I would say it's the easiest thing to do in that game, probably.
Okay. Well, it's
the way that it's the way that you get it. Like it makes sense. Like I didn't get it until like I was a good chunk of the way into the game.
Yeah, yeah. It's an interesting thing because I'm like, I don't know. Just re-engaging that game felt. I know why I don't like that game, but I feel compelled to finish it. And I was kind of like, what if I just like low-key finish this game? And like then just like on one podcast, I'm like, by the way, I finished Tears of the Kingdom. I feel like Justin would have a little complex about it.
I feel like the only reason to finish that game for you is to give Justin anxiety about the fact that he hasn't finished it.
All right, worth it.
I mean, there's no other purpose. I mean, you know, there's no reason you should play the game if you don't enjoy it. There's no trophies.
Well, no, I know.
Can't 100% it.
But it's the only Zelda game that I haven't beaten. Yeah. Like, the only one. I never beat 2.
There you go.
But 2 sucks.
Well, Tears of the Kingdom sucks, apparently, for you.
not as bad as
choose
2.
Joy. Choose joy. This will be your first test to choose joy.
No, I'm probably going to finish it. It's just like, it's just necessary, you know?
But it's not. It's not.
Well, not, it hasn't been for months, you know? But when I'm like playing my Switch, I'm like, what else am I going to play? You know, like, I don't know what else I'm going to play on the Switch right now.
Is it Animal whatever on the Switch?
Yeah, but I'm going to pay for that. I got it for free on PlayStation.
Okay. That's true.
So, you know what game I did put on for a minute? You remember Say No More? I still play that from time to time. You don't remember that? There was like, they look like Katamari people. And it's a game about yelling no at people.
No, I don't remember.
We watched a trailer for this, and I was like, I'm going to play that game. And you're like, you're not going to play that game. And I was like,
I remember the name. I remember the name very clearly, and I can't picture it at all.
Yeah. Eh, it doesn't matter.
It's a catchy name.
It really doesn't matter. The game is pretty mid, but... All right, let's get to the big one. We have some news out of Xbox World. Matt Booty sent an internal email that got released... Well, it basically got leaked early from Jason Schreier at Bloomberg, but then I think it was publicized on Kotaku.
Yeah.
Somebody sent this thing out.
It was leaked and then tweeted and then confirmed.
Yeah, and then later confirmed. But what we're looking at is the closure of a bunch of major Xbox studios, so specifically Bethesda studios. So Tango Gameworks, closed. Arkane Austin, closed. Alpha Dog and Roundhouse Games kind of dissolved and teams moved over to other projects. This super sucks. This is like really, really awful.
Can we just review what games those studios are.
So Alpha Dog and Roundhouse, I don't think we know much about, but the core things here are Arkane Austin made Redfall,
right.
Which was obviously not received super well, but it seemed like they didn't get the kind of support that they needed at launch. But the game was still an active, like they were working on the game, DLCs, all this kind of stuff, before, like, when they were closed.
Right.
So they had to make an announcement afterwards and basically say, like, hey, this game is no longer going to be supported, et cetera, et cetera. So it's just a hot mess.
Wild.
And then Tango Gameworks is the most bizarre of it, the closures.
Yeah.
So this was originally Shinji Mikami's studio that made games like The Evil Within, Evil Within 2, Ghostwire Tokyo. And most recently created the only acclaimed exclusive Xbox game, right? In the last 2 years, which was Hi-Fi Rush. And just out of nowhere, they closed that studio. It's just, it's so strange to me. Yeah. And it's such a, okay, like, I need to collect my thoughts here for a second.
It just is.
Let me flip the record.
I wonder if any, from what I can tell, there hasn't been any more sort of information released other than just the announcement, right? And so, like, I'm curious to know if they're going to come out with any statements or...
That's a loud gummy ship.
You know, if What's-His-Face is going to do another one of those podcasts where he, you know, eats crow the whole time and talks about how terrible Xbox is doing and this is why we had to do this and some sort of, like, explanation as to...
So it was in the email. Yeah.
The email that got leaked?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, that's not exactly a statement from...
In the email, it basically said that they were consolidating the studios to have them focus on, like, individual greater projects within Bethesda. So stuff like Fallout, stuff like, you know, what will eventually be the next Doom, things like that. They were just pulling smaller studios off of... this reprioritization of titles and resources means few teams will be realigned to others... So that some of our colleagues will be leaving us. That's what that says. Okay, so here we go. Today I'm sharing changes we are making to Bethesda's ZeniMax teams. These changes are grounded in prioritizing high impact titles and further investing in Bethesda's portfolio of blockbuster games and beloved worlds, which you have nurtured over many decades. To double down on these franchises and invest to build new ones requires us to look across the business to identify the opportunities that are best positioned for success. This reprioritization of titles and resources means few teams will be realigned to others, and some of our colleagues will be leaving us. Here are the changes that are going to be affected. Arkane Austin closed. Alpha Dog Studio will also close. Tango Gameworks closed. Random House Games, the team at Random House, will be joining ZeniMax Online Studios. So they're basically pulling them over to ESO. With this consolidation of our Bethesda studio teams, so we can invest more deeply in our portfolio of games and new IP, a small number of roles across Bethesda publishing and corporate teams will also be eliminated, and it just keeps going from there. So,
that's what I mean. I feel like I still don't understand why close a successful studio.
Well, this is the thing that I think is pissing everybody off.
Makes sense to close...
You know, Arkane Austin.
Like, yeah, not even that. Like, I don't want to say it makes sense as if it's like, you know, I'm being like flippant about it. You know, that's like a big
no, but I know what you're
saying. In people's lives. Saying. Like, it's a huge impact, and like people are losing their jobs, and right, it's terrible. But like financially, I could understand the reasoning behind like, okay, you guys made this game studio. We can't pour any more money into. We can't pour any more money into this game. And what's successful for our business is these high impact games. So that's what we would like to redirect our attention to. But
yeah,
why take a studio that gave you your only success?
Well, yeah, I mean that
and cannibalize it.
This is why I think everyone's kind of mad about it. And I don't think they're going to come up with a justification for it, but yeah, I mean, Arkane Austin is seeded with failure, right? So I don't think that it's like, well, you made a bad game, so you're out the door. Like, I don't think it's necessarily something like that, but the logic tracks that it's like, if we're looking at wins and losses, like, this is a clear line. But with Tango, it's like, it's just such a bizarre move, considering that that game got nominated for Game of the Year awards. It was like the most highly rated Xbox exclusive game to come out in however long. And then the joke is, they like in their most recent financials, they talked about how the transition of those titles over to PlayStation like performed really well for them. So it's like, cool, you just made a whole bunch of new fans at Hi-Fi Rush, and who you could definitely sell a sequel to,
right?
And you know, now you just kind of squandered that, and it's really just bizarre. And what I was trying to say before, and you know, I still want to make this point as concisely and accurately as I can, it makes me feel, by seeing Xbox do stuff like this after buying Activision and really kind of driving a lot of their effort towards like, hey, we're just going to like purchase these studios and make stuff happen,
right?
When I see them making a total blunderous move like this, like closing your own, like closing a studio that has done nothing but deliver you something of worth and value and a new IP, and you choose to close them, just seems like such a backheaded or like a backwards move, that it indicates to me that Xbox is really not suited to court the type of talent that they've purchased over the last, like, whatever, 10 years.
Yeah.
It's like, I think they did this with the intention that they could foster these companies into creating great games for them, but time after time after time, we see that they are just ineffective managers.
Yeah.
Like, they're just trying to throw money at problems and not helping these companies take their successes over the finish line.
And they're frankly, the common denominator.
Yeah, you know, and it's like, even with something like Hi-Fi Rush, like, honestly, and it might be a reflection of just an initial poor business decision in Game Pass, but it's like, they probably couldn't chart the success of Hi-Fi Rush effectively enough because the game wasn't ever for sale, except for when it sold on PlayStation, and it sold well.
Yeah.
So it's like, what are we really doing here? Like, and it upsets me because it's like, It illustrates to me that there is, like, the line chart is moving in a certain direction, and it's telling me you are mishandling your studios, you're not able to deliver games of quality, you can't see successes when they happen right in front of your face, you know? So it's like, any faith that I have in some of these other studios is really, like, it's really dwindling down, you know?
It's such a cliche that, like, you know, the big studio comes in and they don't, like, respect the talent or the, you know, the creative and this and that. But, like, but I feel like that's what's happening, you know? And it totally, it gives me such a lack of confidence in their management and in their judgment.
Yeah.
Their ability, not just, like, their judgment about what they're doing with the studios, but also, like, about closing them down, but also how they're managing them. Like, I just don't trust that with these other studios that they've purchased that they can manage effectively, either get involved when they need to get involved or not get involved when they shouldn't be getting involved. Like, I feel like Hi-Fi, they kind of based on nothing, I'm assuming they were not very involved in the development of Hi-Fi Rush.
Certainly not.
But just based on the fact that, like, it's a smaller game, they kind of, like, shadow dropped it. Like, there wasn't a lot of, like, PR press. It just did not feel like a game that the studio, like, had all eyes on until all of a sudden they're like, oh, great, this is a good game. Drop it right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it was like, you guys were, oh, you guys are doing so well. This is so great. But I don't know. So that's just a gut, that is a total just gut feeling, but I just have such a gut feeling that they were not involved in that game, and that's why it was successful, and that the games that they are putting all their eyes on are, you know, the Halos and the Starfields, like, are not performing
not at
the
all
way that they should, and they're not either. I don't know which it is. I don't know if they're too involved and they're watering things down and preventing, like, and making them launch things too early, because they need the money, or they need the play, like, they don't even need the money because they're gonna release on Game Pass
and, yeah, no,
so, or if they're not, or if they're not involved enough, like, right, or if, like, this, they're just leaving the studios to their, leaving the developers to their own devices and then not getting in and making tough calls and being like, you guys need to you know, get this
yeah.
shit.
Yeah. I mean, that's my impression for sure. Like, they're just not good suitors, right? Like, they're just not good, what's the word? Like, someone that carries them, right? It's really a...
Support?
Yeah. It's really just such a shame. Yeah. I mean, we even saw the news come out from, like, I think it was today. They talked about how the studio making the new Perfect Dark game, The Initiative, they basically said that Perfect Dark's in really bad shape and, like, they don't know what's going to happen for it. It's probably going to get canceled, realistically. Yeah. Nobody knows what's going on with Gears. It's like, these are your marquee franchises. And it's like, it just seems like there's a lot of mishandling going on there.
Especially when they acquire studios that were doing well and yeah. then... As soon as you've acquired them, now all of a sudden everything has fallen to pieces. Like,
yeah,
you're the common denominator. Like, there's no other way to yeah. to look at that without having that interpretation. I feel like
steward was the word I was looking for. They're not good stewards for these companies. Yes. So, oh, hello, Izzy. Can I help you? Sorry for the meows. This is my cat.
Justin's cat just walked into the room,
and she's very upset about something. What's up, dude? Come here.
She'll be okay if she sits with you.
Yeah. Nope. Come on, Izzy. Come be my friend.
Is Allie not letting her in the room?
No, I think she's probably like, you know, it's we're recording late tonight, so she's probably like, don't you know it's bedtime? There you go.
You're girly.
Very good. So yeah, I think they're just not good stewards for these studios, and what this really boils down to, and I'm just trying to look at it from like the most objective position possible, is I think Phil Spencer might be the problem. Realistically, it's like he got involved, and I know the Xbox community has a lot of love for Phil, but okay, so let's do the timeline, right? Xbox 360, they're murdering it. They've taken over the world.
Right.
Converted multiple fans. That was under the leadership of...
Xbox 360 was huge.
Yeah.
Huge. Yeah. Everybody had an Xbox 360. Nobody had a PS3.
That was under the leadership of, I think his name was Mark Witten. That was like the head of Xbox at that time. We transitioned to Xbox One with Don Matrick. And everyone knows what a blunder that was. It was absolutely terrible. They focused on all the wrong things. Phil Spencer says, I think pretty astutely, that they lost the worst generation to lose, which was the PS4, Xbox One generation.
Right.
Because when people built their libraries, you know, as they said. And now, I think you look at Phil Spencer and it's like, okay, what has Phil really done? Like, he stepped in and he bought a lot of studios. He tried to, I guess, reorganize things. He launched Game Pass, all this kind of stuff. But, like, can we really point to a solid win that's been under the leadership of Phil Spencer? And there's part of me that's like, I think he's a people person. I think he talks to his audience, right? Like, he was marketing earlier. So, like, you know, like, he's been part of the picture. But I mean,
he always does well, like, in conferences. And, like, when he, even when he's, like, delivering bad news, right? Like, when he's on the podcast or they're interviewing him, like, he puts on a good show, good or bad.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, when he needs to be, like, when they did that, after Redfall came out and they had that disaster interview with Phil Spencer, and he went on anyway, like, they could not have had a lot of time to prep him for that interview. And
for
he
sure.
did very well, I think. I think people were like, he was very, I don't know, like, believable.
Yeah. I think I'm just, candor. I think I'm just honing in on, like, no doubt he's a good speaker. No doubt he puts his best foot forward in representation of the brand. But when we look at, like, raw decisions...
No, like, that's what I'm like saying. Like, how maybe it is just, like, he's putting on the show.
Yeah, it's
and
like...
And he's perceived well. But it's, you know, that's just the surface.
Yeah, I feel like that might be the case. And it's funny because I feel like a lot of people dunked on Jim Ryan because he was such, like, a stick in the mud or whatever. But ultimately, like, he led PlayStation through their most successful years, literally. I look at Phil and I'm just like, okay, you created Game Pass and disrupted the industry in a pretty jarring way, right? You basically split the industry for, like, subscribers and non-subscribers. You've diluted basically every major IP that Xbox has a hold of. Yeah. He basically had a hand in losing major partners when it mattered the most, like with Scalebound, you know?
Right.
And then now, like, what's the biggest thing that he can hang his hat on? That he bought Activision Blizzard?
Yeah.
And it's like, fair enough, but what's going to happen to them now? You know,
right?
It's like we've seen what you've done with these studios. Right. You've been in this position for what, like 10 years, and you haven't even crapped out Hellblade 2 yet. Like, come on, man. Like, you know,
I'm mostly. Yeah, I mean, he bought it from the studios, which seemed like a good idea at the time, but he has not delivered on that at all. And it seems none almost as if those studios have been have gotten worse, but like they're not performing as well, or there's some sort of turmoil that they're not cranking out quality games the way that they either were or they should be.
Well, I think just to that point, it's like the first party studios that they have that they've nurtured the whole time. Yeah. This is the Coalition, 343. You know, we look at those products, which arguably should be the strongest products your brand can offer. This is like PlayStation with Naughty Dog, right? That is a marriage that PlayStation holds their hat on, because they say this is what us nurturing a game dev studio looks like.
Yeah.
That's why God of War is the way that it is.
Yeah.
That's why Horizon is the way that it is.
That's really their image, is to say like we crank out first person, like single player experience, narrative based experiences that you can't get anywhere else.
Yeah. And that's why
when they have a studio like Naughty Dog, it's easy to say that you do that, because every time they're going to come up with a game, it's going to be a banger.
But it also gives us a lot of faith where it's like, okay, like when they steward another company, right? Like when they court Kojima to get Death Stranding, when they court Shift Up to get Stellar Blade, it's like there's a certain level of assurance that you have that it's like this game is going to be good. Like I am fairly certain you'll play Rise of the Ronin and be like, this is a good game. You know, whereas when you look at Xbox, it's like, okay, the Coalition really hasn't made anything since things have come out. The only thing that I think they can really hang their head on is Playground, which is the Forza studio. But like 343's blunder with Halo is frankly just a total embarrassment.
Yeah.
Like it's really the worst possible thing that could have happened with that. And now we look at all of these other brands. It's like, okay, so what has Team Ninja done? What has, you know, like this Hellblade studio, what happened to Obsidian? Like the only thing of consequence that Obsidian has put out so far was Outer Worlds, and that was already like on the way before, you know, before they were done. And now it's like, okay, Grounded, fair enough, and now Avowed. So it's like it just seems like they're, I don't know. It's like,
see,
when
we talk about like those games versus if you think about like PlayStation exclusives, like PlayStation exclusive, like talking about Death Stranding, like that game is batshit crazy, right? Absolutely wild. And I feel like PlayStation maybe should have stepped in more, and they like clearly didn't. Like they very clearly were like, this is your creative process, and we have confidence in the level of game that you're going to produce, and like, I can't imagine that, you know, studio execs over at Sony stepped in a lot on Death Stranding, because I'm sure if they had, it would not have been the game that it was, right? Like, just observing from the outside, it really looks like, at least it's painting the picture to me, and I don't know if this is the truth, but it's painting the picture to me that Sony is, like, the kind of steward that lets their children be and like lets their creatives come up with the stories and do their jobs that they're confident in them doing, and because I think they
choose their partners carefully. Right, like they're
just buying everybody.
They look at Kojima and they say, like, the thing that makes this guy's game special is him. So what place do we have in telling him what to do, right? Whereas something like, you know, something like Stellar Blade, it's like that was originally going to be a cross-platform thing, but they saw it and they probably played it and were like, yo, like, we're taking this, right? It's what they did with Final Fantasy. You know what I mean? Yeah. You look at Final Fantasy VII and it's like clearly that, like, I'm certain they had very little to do with the development of that game, but they were like, this is too important for us to not have.
Right. And it just paints the picture that Microsoft is just all about, like, dollars and numbers and guys in suits that are do not understand creative process. And at the end of the, like, yes, you got to make money with your games, 100%, but at the end of the day, like, there are art forms, and if there has to be some level of creative process and there has to be some level of creative freedom, and there's always like a fight, right, between the creatives and the sales team, like execs, you know, they're like, oh, that's all great and you can do all you want, but we got to make money.
Yeah.
But I don't think they've got the balance there. They really seem like they're too far in the direction of, because also a lot of the pitfalls that seem to be happening seem to be decisions made by Microsoft. Like with Redfall, like that game was not ready.
Yeah.
Like, and they, I don't know how they thought it was ready. And like that should have been a place where Microsoft stepped in and said, hey, have you tested this on a larger scale? Do you know how it's going to perform? You know, because this kind of thing happens when you launch games. It's going to be...
Well, that's what it is.
You're playing in this tiny little tester, the cube, you know, silo, like, it's going to perform well. But like that's somewhere where you want a studio with experience to come in and say, when games launch, you have to keep all these things in mind. Instead, they were just like, launch, like, we got to go.
Yeah.
And it so obviously wasn't ready and so obviously needed more time. And I feel like they're not giving these, because they're like behind, they're not giving their developers enough time. Like with Halo, they're not giving them enough time to come out with a full game.
Yeah. And what's funny is like, there's part of me that initially thought, because all of this circles around Bethesda, and there's part of me that was like, well, maybe they did leave Bethesda alone. Maybe Bethesda's different, because like, they released Starfield, and that was the game that they wanted to make. Just so happened that it wasn't all that.
Yeah.
But fine. When that came out, I was like, okay, so I guess Xbox was like, let's step back and just let them do their thing. But now to intervene like this is like, it's such a shame. And it's such a shame. Like, what makes it even more of a shame is like, there's such a focus on Bethesda right now with like the Fallout show and all this kind of stuff. It's like, so then to see them get abused like this, oh, it was great. But to see them get abused in this way is just so like, I'd be so demoralized, you know. Even if I got shifted to another team, I would just be like, come on. Like,
I honestly, when I first heard the news, I did immediately think about like the people working at these companies, and I'm like, they must be like, and I, maybe it is just, I mean, I can't imagine it's just like, maybe the state of the industry, whatever, as a whole, and the state of the economy as a whole is also like impacting that a lot. And it probably is. So it's unfair to put it like completely and entirely on Microsoft, but like, I would be worried. Would be worried if I worked at any studio that was bought by Microsoft.
I
would be concerned. I would be like, you know, and like, I just feel like we've all had those moments at a job where you show up and you like, these people don't know what they're doing, right? Like, your boss is like incompetent, or like their boss like is telling you all this fluff that you're like, none of that is gonna work, and you just like, you just show up to work every day and you're like, this is useless. I'm just here to collect my check, and like, I'm not doing like anything. I'm not doing anything good here because these guys have no idea what they're doing.
Yeah,
I just
that's
feel like
toxic.
That must be the feeling of people when they got that email. Also, why would you put that in an email? Like, that's like, why? How could you put that in an email and not have it be like a company-wide announcement that you make in a meeting and then you don't write down anywhere so that it can't get leaked?
Yeah, I was going to say, you know it's going to leak. No, I you're totally right. And
It's just such a terrible feeling.
It's such a shame too, because I, you know, I think about like Tango in particular, and I think people are most upset about Tango because it's like, they did everything right. You know, they released a game that was successful. Like, they kept the Xbox name relevant, because everyone's just like, oh, you know, that like that Xbox game Hi-Fi Rush is supposed to be really great, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But just like to completely, I don't know, just abuse that relationship is is really what it is. They abuse that relationship. It's, you know, they,
what's the point? What's the point if you're going to do everything right and you're going to put out the game, it's going to get the awards, it's going to do well, it's going to sell, quote unquote, sell well. Like, you know, the play that count is up. And then at the end of the day, they still just, you're still just a cog in the wheel.
Yeah. That feeling,
like, that
is going to be pervasive.
So corporate to me.
Totally.
Like, that does not feel like any kind of, you know, safe creative space. And I'm not like a person that
I'm
leans on that kind of stuff, but you have to have it. Like, what's, I don't understand it. I'm not a creative person, I know it needs to be there. Like,
and the joke is, you would think that Xbox or Microsoft as a company would be like able, like, so you mentioned like the economic situations, and I think right. that is a reality that's going on. But it's Microsoft. They are so flush with money, it's insane. Right. It's like you would think that they would be the ones to say like, "Hey Tango, like, everyone's hurting right now, and we're gonna show like a loss or something, but we're going to float you guys because you delivered us a banger. Like, you did the right thing. So, like, you know, we're gonna do what we can to support you." And it's just so cold, you know. It's just so
right.
It's just so cold.
Is it even smart? Like, is it a good financial decision? Is it a good financial decision to take a studio that could make you money and like give you good press and close them down and take those developers and creators and put them somewhere else where they're not going to be delivering for you in the same way?
Even like, just the optics. Even just the optics. I am certain that the number of people that canceled their Game Pass subscription after hearing this news is not zero.
Yeah.
So like, I'm certain somebody was like, "I'm out. Like, forget this." You know, because like, what are you there for?
Yeah. What are we waiting for?
Yeah. You got the one offhand banger from the studio. Oh, and gone. You know.
Yeah.
It's just, it doesn't make any sense.
So that's what I mean. So it really, from the outside, it really seems to make no sense. So I'm very curious to know if any other statement is going to come out from Xbox in the next week or so.
I hope
that kind of even a bad justification, like just something that says, you know, if for us it makes sense, don't worry about it.
I'm not sure what needs to happen, but it seems like they need someone like a Mark Witten back on staff, somebody to be like, okay, because like at this point, like, all of the bad decision making, I think, has ramped up and has gone on long enough where they need some kind of rebrand.
Yeah.
Like, it's always going to be called Xbox, you know? Right. Like, but I feel like if they had somebody in that position, like, essentially replace Spencer and say, like, listen, we've gone through some tough times or what have you. We're going to refocus on everything that makes Xbox great. We're, you know, investing in these studios in like strong ways. We have a focus
on Game Pass.
We have our we're getting rid of Game Pass. We're focusing on IP. Like, cause I think they need to make big decisions like that. And I don't think it's possible within their current structure.
I mean, it only takes one person, really. Like, to, if you, it reminds me of, Disney, actually, like the Disney company, they were in a real bad place in, I think, probably like the 2010s ish, late, you know, late 2009, 2007, where I don't know the exact years, but essentially they were coming out with movies like Home on the Range.
Yeah.
You remember that piece of garbage? Yeah. It got like a 12% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Is this when they got Bob Iger back?
And then it was because the CEO at the time of Disney was the son-in-law, I think, of Walt Disney.
Yeah.
Or like grandson or something. So he was like, it was like, you know, nepotism. He wasn't like a creative. Like, he wasn't really suited. He just wasn't really suited for the position. He wasn't making a decision.
Yeah.
And they got rid of him. And yeah, I think it was they bought on Bob Iger at that point. And like the first thing he did was buy Pixar.
Yeah.
And I was, so when they were like, when Xbox was like, we're going to start buying studios, I was like, this is your solution. Cause I've seen this before. Mm-hmm. And like, buying Pixar fixed Disney.
Yeah.
It really did. Like, he was like, they were like, we're not going to touch you. Like, we want you to teach us. Like, you are doing it right.
Yeah.
And, you know, John Lasseter, you're killing it. You come into our studios and teach our animators and our creatives and, like, get rid of anybody you don't like. Bring in whoever you need to bring in to fix us. And, like, slowly but surely, like, the movies started getting better until, like, finally they came out with Frozen. And it was, like, a banger. Like, it was, like, it killed, right?
It's so funny because that exact – I imagine that same mentality is what PlayStation did with Bungie.
Yeah.
But completely bungled that. I mean, oh my gosh. But like, do you hear Hiroki Totoki was saying about Bungie? They were like, Bungie is has no culture of accountability whatsoever. Like, basically nobody's working hard there. Like, nobody cares about how much money they're spending or what kind of deliverability they have or any of this stuff. It's just crazy.
So yeah, so I feel like it can take one CEO to make like one big change, culture shock, and like make tough calls and fix things.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I mean that company's fixed now. And then now they're buying, you know, then he bought Star Wars, yeah. Like, and Marvel, and like now they are burning money. Like,
yeah.
They could set all the money on fire and they would still have money left
to buy
something else.
Yeah.
Avatar. They're killing it.
I think Xbox needs something like that, yeah. You know? And it's just the way that things are going is not looking good. And I think the type of change that's necessary has to be drastic,
yeah.
And I don't think you can make drastic change with the same people. Like,
because I mean, this is how you got into the mess in the first place.
Well, that's what it is.
So
you know?
Are they suddenly gonna? I don't know. Yeah, I think at some point in a company, you have to like have a changing of the guard,
yeah.
In order to bring about, because the world changes too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like you see like documentaries about, you know, Victoria's Secret and that guy who was just like gonna keep using the same marketing that he was using in the 80s and 90s and then try and use it in 2015, and people are like, this is like your customer is not the same, your people are like, you gotta, and they were just would never have evolved with him, because at some point he's like, well, I've been doing this so long, so I know what I'm doing, and it's like, well, if you knew what you were doing, we wouldn't
be in the red.
And all of the things that you did back then that you like thought were successful or maybe even were successful don't work now, or maybe they never worked.
Yeah.
Like, to get you in this problem, to get you in this whole mess.
Yeah, it's there needs to be a change because what they're doing is not working. Clearly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I honestly, I don't really have the numbers on it.
Mm.
So this is,
I'm more so just getting it off of like the temperature. I'm just taking the temperature of the situation.
I mean, just
and I'm like, I haven't heard something good,
right?
Or been excited in a very long time with Xbox. And I know that I just in general tend to lean more PlayStation with stuff in general, but I feel like I've tried to be as agnostic as possible. I'm just more of a fan of games.
Right.
So like if there's something to be excited about, I will be there.
Right.
Like PS3 era, I was way more seated in Xbox 360 camp,
right.
Like most people, you know?
Also, rising tide raises all ships.
Exactly, like, right? Competition is good and necessary, you know? So it's not even like trying to perpetuate like a console war type of environment, but like I think having these different players in the space makes it rises all tides. It's exactly like you're saying. Everybody wins when we all play. Who said that? Reggie? That was one of the things.
I think that's Reggie.
All right. What do you say we put a pin in this?
Yep.
Guys, this has been a fairly depressing episode.
I know. I feel like we got to end it before I get too sad.
That's right. That's right. There was some happiness here. You know what the happiness is? We just might have done our first episode, just the two of us.
Yeah.
Look at that. I think we had a good time.
I had a good time.
Awesome. I had a good time too. Let's go on another date. All right, everyone. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Crit Rate Podcast. Again, be sure to go to critrate.io and find your house. If you're already a user, check out the games page. There are so many. Like, I have probably added like 100 games in the last 3 days. Like, go look at the site. There's a lot of meat on the bone now, especially the upcoming page. The upcoming page is the best upcoming page of any game site, I promise you. If you're trying to see what's coming out, our upcoming page is just structured better. It looks better. It functions better than anything else that's out there. So go check that out. But in the meantime, thank you, Liz, for joining me tonight.
Thank you, Justin.
And we hope you all have a wonderful week. Have a good one. Bye.